Two roosters I slew, and with all of my might, I prayed hard for you in Haiti at night.
The singer we're listening to now, Stephen Merritt, is one of those songwriters who has a lot going on in his professional and intellectual life. He's probably best known as the lead singer of Magnetic Fields, whose short, esoteric pop songs reference everything from Busby Berkeley to George Gershwin to zombies. And that's before you even get to his other bands, the Gothic Archies, the Sixth, and the Future Bible Heroes. But let's stop before we get too carried away. We're here to talk about the brand new Magnetic Fields record, Distortion. And fortunately, we have a guide. L.D. Bechtel, played on Magnetic Fields' best-known recording, the triple album 69 Love Songs. He also wrote a book about the making of the record. We sat down in the studio last week to talk about what happens when you cross the pristine old-fashioned radio pop of a band like Magnetic Fields with waves of distortion. And like a good insider, Bechtel started us off with some choice descriptions of Merritt the Man.
Cold and distant and judgmental and disapproving and slow talking. But that's his public persona. He's actually really sweet and funny and loves his dog, Irving Berlin, the Chihuahua. He's sort of absurdly intelligent and really funny and bizarre.
Will I hear all of that about Stephen Merritt in his music?
I think so, because he's so intelligent and so well-read and so interested in such a broad spectrum of things, of course that comes out, because he'll write songs about zombies and vampires or refer to critical theory that you don't normally get in three-minute pop songs. So the deep literate quality of his being certainly comes across in most of his work.
If you had to put this in context for me, Magnetic Fields and Stephen Merritt's contribution to modern music, could you put it in context for me? I mean, for people, they know they haven't heard them on commercial radio for sure.
Very little. Well, some now. He's good. After 69 Love Songs, which came out, I guess, almost 10 years ago, he had this huge surge in popularity. But before that, he was considered this amazingly literate, verbal lyricist who also wrote these charming little three-minute pop songs using odd instruments like cello and banjo and ukulele instead of here's my cock rock guitar kind of solo thing. So since that automatically set him apart from the indie rock, Nirvana, Pixies, kind of what used to be college rock and then became indie rock, he was always doing this other thing. And slowly this audience grew for him and sort of began to accept you can write really great pop songs without necessarily having to have loud guitars or write about heterosexual love affairs or I hate my parents or gosh, I wish I weren't in school anymore or something like that.
You can go for bigger, broader themes or even deeper. You can dig deeper into one single emotion.
Or just silliness, as opposed to just sex or just social enemy or something like that.
The new album is called Distortion. What is distortion? But you just helped me out with that.
Vocal fry.
What is the musical definition of distortion?
Well, distortion, of course, is a less than optimum presentation of a sound. So if you hear a nice mandolin pluck, it should sound like that. But if it's not recorded correctly or if you've chosen to do something to it, it will make a horrible, discordant, often very resonant, really disturbing sound. So with guitars, of course, you aim your guitar at the amp and feedback happens because of the electromagnetic field and stuff like that, which I'm not a physicist, so I can't really talk about. But that's what happens, and you know it famously from the Velvet Underground or any number of Jimi Hendrix songs or 60s psychedelic stuff. So that's distortion in terms of guitars and rock music.
Well, let's listen to a track from the album Distortion. This is called Three Way.
It's about the three way.
Because the album is named Distortion, am I led to believe that every track will use distortion in some way?
Heavily. There's, of course, guitar distortion, because that's easy and fun to do in a studio, but there's also heavily distorted cello. He set up amps and mics, so when a signal is pumped into a room, it would go from a speaker to another speaker along the way, get tremoloed and reverbed and distorted and tweaked out with the EQ, so, of course, on a lot of it, you don't know, is that a normal electric guitar, or is this a cello being played strangely, or is this a piano or a farfisa that's been so heavily distorted and treated that the sound source is obscured, but you have this wall of noise.
When is distortion best used? Because I can imagine, like, any sort of, I don't want to say trick, but any sort of device you can employ, it can be used gratuitously.
Absolutely. And I think, to a certain extent, it is used gratuitously on this record as a production device, because he said, okay, I'm going to take these songs and I'm going to make a ton of distortion on them. Mm-hmm. I think it works really well on some and less well on others, but Stephen's always been interested in extreme production techniques, and some of which he just arbitrarily applies. This is going to be the heavily delayed vocal, or this is going to be the, I'm going to reproduce it so lo-fi it sounds like it's coming over transistor radio 100 yards away. Just different sounds, as opposed to here's a cleanly recorded Stratocaster, or here's a perfect piano, or here's a mandolin, because we all know what those sound like. So he's interested in exploring other types of sound and recording other types of sounds.
Stephen Merritt's used this before, obviously, on other records.
Oh, tons, yeah. Some of his very earliest recordings are done at home. So that's going to be inherent in the sort of lo-fi early recordings, because you just don't get the clarity of sound you do from a big studio. Now, obviously, the later stuff, his more recent stuff, is recorded in a much better equipped, really hi-fi, excellent studio. But then it's a choice. Okay, I'll distort this, or I'll bounce it into a room and record it on, you know, those little old-fashioned things we call cassettes.
I remember those.
Well, if you record something onto that, of course, the sound of the tape colors it, and the tape hiss and the surface noise. So that's also a type of distortion, and he's certainly used production techniques like that for years. But the difference, I think, is in the old stuff, it was more a background to the song. So the foreground of the song would be the vocal, an instrument or two, and a percussion track. So you're hearing a guitar, and you're hearing a bass drum or something, or snare, and the vocals. But behind that will be this constant roar of distorted guitar that you maybe only hear when the vocal stops or in a break or when it's an instrumental passage and all of a sudden this swelling.
Alien Being is from the EP House of Tomorrow.
House of Tomorrow. His best record, I think. You talk a lot about nothing. Watch TV shows about nothing. A loop song and has really great drums and this pretty melody, and it's Stephen singing on this one. So you don't kind of notice the distortion except as this sort of background texture, which is all over almost everything he's ever done. Hear that?
That's from Magnetic Fields, House of Tomorrow EP, Alien Being. When I think about distortion, I immediately think of the band Jesus and Mary Chain. I don't know if I'm tipping my hat at my age, but...
Well, I think anybody who was alive in 1985 or 86 and heard that found their life changed in their view of pop music and what was acceptable. It certainly wasn't Hall & Oates. Although I love Hall & Oates. But
yeah, I do too, Sarah. They could, smile.
Right, of
gets
course.
Gets me every time. Can you describe for me the difference between the way Jesus and Mary Chain used distortion and the way that Stephen Merritt uses it?
Well, they're very related in the new record, obviously, because his idea for the new record apparently was to out Mary Chain the Mary Chain. When the Mary Chain record Psycho Candy came out in 1985, it was totally alien, in fact. It was like music from another world, because here you had these sort of lullaby, pretty Beach Boys pop songs, simple chords, two or three chord songs with nursery rhyme sort of melodies and simple lyrics sung emphatically but not screamed by these pale Scottish boys with enormous hair and lipstick and eyeliner and leather motorcycle gear playing enormously loud amounts of feedback, just waves, symphonic waves, avalanches of feedback over these little pop songs. But the way they orchestrated the feedback, and I use that very specifically, it could have been a string arrangement, or it could have been a wind arrangement or something, just forced into this sort of atonal squall. But it happens to be guitars, because they were 17-year-old kids, and that's what they had. So instead of the whole Jimi Hendrix, Velvet Underground, we're going to play annoying, loud feedback and be aggressive and all this, they opted to go, no, we're going to write pretty little songs and just make them really loud. So you have this enormously warm, fuzzy, encompassing sound that was immediately different from any other feedback-based music of the time, I think.
We're talking with L.D. Bechdel, who's played with Stephen Merritt in Magnetic Fields, and you played on probably his best-known album, 69 Love Songs, and you wrote for that 33 and a Third book series about the record.
Yeah, that was weird, wasn't it?
I think that series is great.
No,
I think
thanks.
It's really pretty cool. Merritt samples from all kinds of pop genres. So what did you learn about his taste from writing about that record?
Well, I think the term Catholic applies for this. Before making the record, long before that, and even after, since then, Stephen and my friend Dudley Clute, who is also in the record, have had endless, I mean, ongoing, hour after hour, sitting in a bar discussions about everything from 1920s Tin Pan Alley, 1890s Parlor Ballads, which was the first pop music, on up to 60s psychedelia and French cabaret jazz. Mm-hmm. And we all have this deep interest in 60s, 70s, sort of early 70s psychedelic-y produced, orchestrated stuff from the Phil Spector stuff and Beach Boys. Beach Boys are a huge influence. On up to the New Wave, early 80s stuff, which is a huge part of all of our background. So endless discussions about that. And his knowledge of that is encyclopedic.
He writes all the songs for Magnetic Fields, mm-hmm. but uses a lot of different vocalists. We heard his vocals earlier, but he uses women vocalists quite often. Do you need to apply distortion differently when you're using a female vocalist?
Well, sure, because a lot of distortion is going to be in a higher range.
Mm-hmm.
Pitch-wise. So it has to be EQ'd differently so it'll come out acceptably against a female vocal, which is often in a higher register. Now, Shirley, of course, is an alto in the alto range, which is a low female voice, which is good because it's also equivalent sort of to a male tenor voice. So it's not high-high, and it's not low like his,
mm-hmm.
but it's this good, acceptable pop range of vocals. And, of course, she has a beautiful voice, so anything she sings is going to be good. Her songs are very successful on this record because her voice is so strong and it's in the right place pitch-wise and emotionally. It has this androgynous quality, which is good.
When people listen to the album Distortion, what do you want them to keep in mind? What should they keep in mind as they're listening to this record?
Well, it's easy if you're me or someone who's really interested in production to just listen for the production because, wow, that's some beautiful feedback, and I wonder if that's a cello, or, wow, how did they get the piano to sound like it was underwater? So if you're savvy to that kind of production or the idea of production and recording, then, of course, you're going to be analytical about it, and that's really fun too, but fortunately most people are not going to have that, and they can just listen to it as pop songs and listen for the fun wordplay that he often does and the beauty of Shirley's voice, which is always important.
L.D. Bechdel, thank you for the guide.
Sure.
Cut from L.D. Bechdel and the new criticism on our blog today. It's called What You Will. Check it out at npr.org/Bryant Park. I'm Allison Stewart.
I'm Rico Galliano.
Thanks for listening to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.